The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Kate Andrews. Now, Kate, today the IMF had some exciting new figures out for April. Tell us about them.
Very exciting, James. Actually, it's a bit more of the same, which isn't a great news story. The IMF's April 2024 World Economic Outlook report is out, and it has, you know, pretty grim news, nothing you haven't heard before, about why the global economy is looking rather lackluster at the moment. High interest rates, high borrowing costs, international uncertainty, weak productivity. All the things we've been suffering from is continuing to combine and suppress that growth we want to see. But if we break it down and look at the UK, how is the UK looking? As has often been the case over the past few years, Britain doesn't look great, but it's not the ugliest baby. It's not the worst, based on the countries that you would usually compare it to. So among advanced economies, the UK is below average when it comes to its predictions for economic growth this year and next year, growing at around 0.5% this year and 1.5% next year. That's a 0.1% downgrade for both years compared to its January forecast. But Germany still looks worse. And of course, by the time you get to 2025, I think probably the best news is that the UK is comfortably at the middle of the pack with expected higher growth than Japan, Germany, and France. So it would still be falling behind countries like the US when it comes to advanced economies, but better news. How realistic are these forecasts? How much weight can we put on them? As always, you know, economic forecasts are by no means a crystal ball. The IMF has a mixed track record when it comes to making predictions around the UK economy. It was in January last year that it was saying Britain would be the only country to fall into recession, that Britain would by far be the ugliest baby of the bunch. And that turned out to be a position that Germany held, not the UK. I think what continues to be difficult is that the IMF's growth forecasts aren't all that different from the other growth forecasts we're getting. They might be within the margin of error, but that 2.5% growth that Liz Truss talked about once upon a time, that you'll hear Tory politicians still whisper about, is what the UK really needs to be able to deliver on all of its promises. We're not anywhere near it, and nobody thinks we are.
Thank you. Katie, within government, there's a bit more optimism, though, isn't there, about some of the economic figures coming out and the forecast over the next 12 months?
I think that's right, James. And of course, tomorrow we'll get inflation figures. Now, I don't think these are the inflation figures of the various month, the ones they received that Number 10 are most excited about. But generally speaking, obviously, we know the direction inflation is going. And we know that if the Tories can pick an election date based on the economy alone, rather than mutinous backbenchers and so forth, you would probably end up in the autumn, because that is when they think, a variety of factors will have meant that people start to feel the benefits, such as, for example, that national insurance cut, which I think they've got about zero thanks for in the polls. But if you combine that with inflation coming down, if the bank starts to cut rates, which is still a big if, but if it does, and the effect that will have on mortgages, then I think, you know, they think you are on sturdier ground. I think it's worth pointing out this is all relative, and it's more saying things will be better than the cost of living crisis that lots have been feeling for some time recently, as opposed to we think this is, you know, the best conditions the economy has seen, as, you know, to really get that bounce. I think it's more about what is your least worst option when we talk about these improvements.
Now, elsewhere, the big debate that's been rumbling on today is Rishi Sunak's plan to introduce a generational smoking ban. Prime Minister at the afternoon lobby conference was made clear that his spokesman said that the Prime Minister does not believe he is a, quote, finger-wagging control freak. Kate, do you think that Rishi Sunak is a finger-wagging control freak? And explain your opposition to the legislation that's going through Parliament now.
Well, to be clear, those weren't my words. I believe those were the words used in the chamber today by the former Prime Minister, Liz Truss, who stood up and gave a very impassioned speech about why she was against the smoking ban. A few other MPs have as well. Simon Clark has, Sir Jake Berry has. Not many. It has been pretty depressing watching on this afternoon, seeing how few MPs, particularly on the Conservative side, have shown up to make the case. Everybody knows that this bill is going to pass. That's not the question. The question is, how big might that rebellion be? There's been a bit of debate about that today, but the Tories and the Labour Party are completely united on this front, that they want to create two tiers of adults, because despite many of the comments made in favor of the smoking ban in the chamber this afternoon, this is not about what happens to children and whether or not they have access to cigarettes. Absolutely nobody thinks that children should have any kind of access to cigarettes. The question is what happens when those children are 35, 45, 95, what they should have the legal right to do as adults. It's also been very depressing to watch some of the pushback on those who would make the case for freedom. The Shadow Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, as you said, James, I believe, seemed to be having a lot of fun today. And I think he was. I think he was having a great time. He knows that this is an idea that Labour has been talking about for a long time. The Tories have adopted it, although you do get the impression that number 10 very much does agree with the policy as well. And it's going to go through. But, you know, the accusations against those who would question this bill were, you know, do you want children to have nicotine addictions? Do you want children to have easier access to cigarettes? And I think those kinds of arguments just show the holes in this legislation. And I think it is very reasonable to talk about the slippery slope, because now that you've created this brand new mechanism, first one ever created in the world, because New Zealand's dropped the policy, that you're going to have different consumer rights for different tiers of adults. What might a Labour Party that wants to focus on sugary food and other kinds of things use this new kind of public policy for? You can easily imagine that it wouldn't stop at cigarettes.
To Kate's point, I do think one of the really interesting things about this policy is that I don't think it's just libertarians who might look at this and think, is this a principle we want to carry forward? And I think the concern, speaking to some MPs who have not spoken publicly today, is effectively, if, and I think the Tory party, you start thinking more about this, if the Tory party is not going to be in power forever and ever, what powers are they putting in place that other parties with different political agendas can use? Now, often when you say to someone, well, don't you need to be a bit careful because you're giving this power and someone else could do this with it? I say, well, we just need to make sure we win the next election then. Well, that seems ambitious. But also, if you start to concede the principle that a preventive health policy is one whereby a liberal in the sense you can never do something, does that mean Labour or, you know, a Labour, Lib Dem, Green coalition one day in the future might start to do something about, you know, other says you can't have this many drinks at the pub anymore, the levels of drinking, is it going to be something about fast food? And I think you can argue, some people say, well, maybe that's a good thing while we have the NHS and so forth, but I'm not sure it's been chewed through when it comes to this discussion. And I think that if it is just cigarettes alone, I think that you can look at some of the health statistics when it comes to cigarettes, you know, how they stand out. And this is an argument you hear from number 10 and say, this particular vice that we will call it on this podcast today is so bad that actually you have to do it here. And we, the Conservative Party, led by Rishi Sunak, don't think you'd extend it anywhere else. I just don't think you can know who else is going to extend it. I think in terms of where the party is and where the public is, there's an interesting poll today, which I think, I suppose, you know, for all our criticism here, you know, 2/3 of 2019 Conservative voters support Rishi Sunak's plan to introduce a phase ban of smoking. I think initial polling too suggests it's very popular with the public generally. I think it's obviously a different thing to being very popular or polling well to being the most urgent issue on someone's mind when it comes to between now and the next election. But it's worth pointing out that while it is divisive for the Tory party, I think that it is a policy and probably one of the more popular Tory policies that there are. I think in terms of the vote tonight, of course, people may be listening to this podcast after the vote has happened. So this is a good way of marking our homework and learning that I said things that were completely wrong.
But that's what tomorrow's podcast is working.
Exactly. The apology.
The inquest.
I think that what is going to be interesting is, so I think the whips thing, there'll be about 50 rebels. Have they got that wrong? Of course, this is just a second reading. Once we get to committee stage, we might have the sight of, you know, different divisions on cigars versus cigarettes and so forth and how that goes. But it is, of course, a free vote. And I think that, you know, as soon as the policy was announced in that infamous Tory conference speech where Rishi Sunak tried to say he was a change candidate and it didn't go particularly well, with hindsight, he did say, number 10 said this was going to be a free vote. So some have said, oh, you know, it's a sign of the division that he has to give a free vote. I think on an issue like this, it is what you would give, you know, the Tory party a free vote on. No, Labour are whipping. That said, if members of the cabinet vote against it, I think that is not necessarily a blow to Rishi Sunak's authority, but is also not what he would be wanting to see happen. I think as much as it is a free vote, the hope in Downing Street will be that it's mainly backbenchers going there. And in terms of cabinet, I think today the name that has been spoken about initially was, will Kemi Badenoch vote against it? And now, in the past hour, there are reports that Penny Mordaunt could. Now, what do these two women have in common? They are pretty high on the bookies' odds to be the next Tory leader. So are we starting to see almost a flexing of the freedom argument that we're going to hear more in a Tory leadership contest? And, you know, is this going to be a part there? Despite the fact I'm sure both women, if they were here now, would say they have very principled positions. Also, we get to say they'll really go for it. Because I think as cabinet, to vote against is a bigger step. And then I think you'll probably get a handful of ministers. So the ones that I think MPs are talking about who might vote against today as ministers could be Steve Baker. I think given Steve Baker's position on her, you know, liberty and so forth, that'd be consistent with his views. Lee Rowley also could potentially vote against it. And I think if you think back to Liz Truss's previous outfit, Freer, back in the Freer days, this was the group when she was in cabinet, losing track of which Tory prime minister, I think maybe Boris Johnson or Theresa May, but it was you know, MPs arguing for more freedom and rights, and he was in that. So I think, again, consistent. Could Julia Lopez, another member of that 2017 intake, who was also, I think, involved, go for it? So I think those are some of the names going round. But I think, therefore, I think we have a sense of which backbenchers will do it. I think it'll be interesting to see which ministers and cabinet members feel emboldened to act.
The Freer initiative was through the Institute of Economic Affairs, where I used to work, and I remember it being launched. And I remember Liz Truss played a really big role in that. Lee Rowley was one of the co-chairs. And a lot of the pamphlets that MPs that were part of this group were putting out at the time were about social freedoms and about liberty. And there was an event where Krispy Kremes were piled high and Liz Truss was taking selfies with them. So, you know, to Katie's point, there are the usual suspects who will vote against the smoking bill, but people who have risen the ranks since then and found themselves as ministers are certainly ones to watch. Penny Mordaunt's an interesting name to me because, of course, it was last year at party conference where she did her big rousing speech where I've got the quote here where party activists need to, quote, stand up and fight for things upon which the progress of humanity depends, freedom, end quote. And then about 10 minutes later, the prime minister was announcing the intergenerational smoking ban. So, you know, what might somebody like Penny Mordaunt, who clearly continues to have ambitions for herself and potentially in opposition, do today? But, you know, Katie used the right word, vice. Smoking is a vice. I agree with the government's assessment that there's not a healthy level of smoking. And as I think I wrote last year, nor is there a healthy levels of Jaeger bomb or fried pickles or men who won't commit. There are some things that are not good for us in any dosage.
No, do you think there's any healthy number of Jaeger bombs?
Healthy? No. I mean, you can try, you know, you can argue that a glass of red wine in moderation is actually healthy, right? There are studies that'll tell you that.
Is it the sugar?
The Jaeger bomb, I think, is the combination of alcohol and energy drink that people broadly think is not great for your heart. I'm not a doctor. Please don't take any medical advice from me. I'm saying I don't think healthy is the word we would identify with the Jaeger bomb. That doesn't mean, Katie, that if you and I are looking for a great Friday night, we shouldn't be allowed to go do that.
Yeah.
And nor should the next generation of adults, not children, adults, who might want to do such things too. The fact that the Tory party, of all parties, is losing perspective on that tells you what kind of position you're in now. And also to Katie's point, yeah, they've got a popular policy. They haven't had one in a long time. So, you know, maybe that is the true justification for it. But it's also something to be noted that the people they're polling are exactly the people who can't have a say over their future yet because they're still children.
And of course, the group before Freer was the Free Enterprise Group, of whom the most prominent member probably was Liz Truss, who was one of two cabinet ministers 10 years ago to vote against the plain packaging of cigarettes. So we wait to see if perhaps any of her would-be successors will go through the lobby tonight. But you can keep up to date on Coffee House with a full list of every Tory MP who tonight votes against the generational smoking ban on our website. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffee House Shots.